Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thrizer is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thrizer.com/modern therapist, and use the code modernTherapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thrizer.
Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY done with you training and done for you SEO options. So there is truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist and use the code modern therapist for a DIY course or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your consult for special offers.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and we are rapidly approaching everybody's favorite season, tax season. And that is... actually, nobody's favorite season. I don't even think it's the accountant's favorite season, at least the accountants that I know. They're like, you know, I'm going to talk to you for like, you know, the 15 minutes that I'm obligated to. But we are joined today by Julie Harris. She's an accountant and owner of Green Oak Accounting, and she is going to spend much longer than 15 minutes with us today. So that way we can get some good tax advice wrapping up here at the end of 2020 and kind of going forward into 2021, managing some of our stuff. So that way this whole tax discussion isn't as bad as it seems. So thank you, Julie, for spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're so excited to have you here. You've been a great friend to our show and to our conference. We have loved to collaborate with you. So the question we ask all of our guests is, who are you and what are you putting out into the world?
And I love that question. So I'm Julie Harris. I'm the owner of Green Oak Accounting. I also have a podcast, which is Therapy for Your Money, where we talk about all things money and finance for private practice. So my team and I specialize in working with therapists in private practice. And so what we put into the world, I would say, is we truly believe every practice should be profitable. So we want every practice owner to be making a profit and be able to make a living from their practice. And that's what we do on the financial side, is help business owners either get profitable, increase profitability, and really be able to sustain their lifestyle.
I love that.
What do you find that a lot of therapists tend to get wrong about the financial end of their practices? Because you're with Green Oak Accounting focusing on therapist practices, I'm sure that you see some pretty common things that if we can just help our audience not make those same mistakes that a lot of people tend to make. But what are those mistakes that you see happen?
Well, sure. Well, so this time of year, one that comes to mind is not saving for taxes, right? And today, there's no time like the present. Today is still better than next month. But if you haven't been saving for taxes throughout the year, this is the time to start looking at that, because it's not too late, right? Your taxes aren't due quite yet. But as you start putting that together, at least in my firm, a lot of our clients have had a really good year. And then the PPP has added an interesting element to that. A lot of practice owners did take advantage of that program. And so what that's creating is an additional tax burden. And so looking at the numbers is probably my number two, and they're kind of interrelated, right? Because if you're not looking at the numbers, you don't know how much you made, you don't know how much you should be saving for taxes. But there's just so much useful information in the financials. And I think it's a common mistake not to look at it, or just to do it in a compliance sense, but not analyze and look at like, what are the numbers telling us about this business? Because you can uncover a lot of different things there to be able to really make some data-driven decisions versus some gut feeling decisions. So I like the data-driven decisions. Obviously, yes. That's what I do. But that's a mistake that comes up often, is either leaving all the bookkeeping to the end of the year and not really looking at it, or having it done, but not really looking at what the numbers are saying.
What are the kind of things that practice owners learn once they actually start looking at those numbers?
Well, There's a lot of different things. So where to start? So when we do the numbers in my firm, we, for our clients, we organize the expenses in a couple of different categories. So one of the main categories we look at is rent. And for some practices, that's even going away this year. We look at overhead. Typically, we look at clinician pay if there is, if there are clinicians. We look at admin as well. And then officer owner compensation, right? So, and that compensation might be wages, depending on the entity, and profit. So we look at that whole, like, what is the owner taking home basically in taxable income as a whole? So based on when we separate the expenses that way versus looking at a really long P&L where you're looking at, you know, office supplies and bank fees and, you know, each individual item, that helps us kind of get a sense of general ratios. So by looking at that way, it's a little less overwhelming as far as what do I do next or what do I focus on next? So if you look at your ratios that way and you see, you know, my rent is really completely out of whack. It's way too big of a percentage of my total income. So then you can focus your efforts there and fix that problem, because that might not be a rent problem, right? It could be that your rent is really high, but there's solutions. There could be, you could sublet the space, which is a little bit harder to do right now, but 6 months, or, you know, a year ago, that was very much within the realm of possibility. You could look at, you know, breaking the lease, but often what we find is just this space is too big for the revenue that the business is generating. So let's find a way to increase the revenue, either by adding clinicians, right? Or you seeing more clients? Because sometimes we've had clients come in and they have rented this big, beautiful space and it's gorgeous, but it's just them and they're seeing 10 clients a week. And so that the numbers, like, right, that means the numbers are out of whack. So there are lots of different solutions, but then we can kind of focus the efforts in that one place that needs the most help and then move on once that's fixed.
You're throwing out words that I don't think a lot of therapists are used to really looking at money with, like ratios and plans. And, you know, I'm trying to poke a little bit of fun at this here, because for a lot of therapists who don't feel prepared of being business people entering into things, what I'm really taking out of this is it is well worth it to hire somebody who knows money and can sit you down and force you to have some of these uncomfortable conversations to look at the way that money happens to be more than just kind of like, oh, I'm bringing in this much, or conceptualizing it as I just need to have four sessions in a month to cover my rent. That having a good, intentional, and oftentimes uncomfortable discussion is a really big necessity of having that profitable practice.
I think so. The reality is most therapists didn't go also to business school, right? That does happen once in a while, but it is the exception more than the rule. And owning a practice is much more than just being a great clinician and taking care of your clients. There's a lot of other pieces to that. And I think ignoring the business side can be a mistake, because if the practice isn't profitable, ultimately the therapist cannot continue their mission forever, right? Eventually you will either run out of money or your spouse won't support you anymore, right? Like something will happen that will force you either to go back to work for someone else or close down the practice. That's just the reality, right? As much as it's not fun, we all need money to live to some extent. So focusing on that, not in a greedy way, but in a, I want to be a good person, or, you know, a good steward of the money that's coming in into this business and be sustainable both for myself and my lifestyle and for my clients. Like that's a very reasonable thing to do.
And I'm imagining that there's a lot of folks that either right now they're listening or they've been in this kind of contemplation phase of, I really should get a handle on my numbers. I should understand it. And maybe they've just been putting receipts in a box, or maybe they are just doing, you know, what I was initially doing, which was, I called it my bank account accounting, which is everything went in and out of the bank account. I wasn't looking at it, but everything was going in and out of that account. So I had a little bit of an idea, but it seems to me that there's a proactive step to really being a strong business owner. But we're at the end of December or towards the end of December, and folks are like, oh no. So how hard is it to like clean up your books, to right the ship? Like how hard is it to kind of take a really messy financial picture from your practice and actually get to this place where you're digging in and getting yourself on track to be profitable, to have this kind of a practice that you're talking about?
There's degrees, right, of riding the ship. So more money, more problems tends to be true in this case. One of the good things that can be done is if all of the business transactions are actually happening in the business bank account, that's ideal, right? That's the ideal situation where at least you can look at that and have a good sense of what's going on. That's, I call that bank balance bookkeeping, where you're just pulling up the app and looking like, is there money? Okay, we're good. Generally speaking, but for tax purposes, that doesn't really help us, but at least you could reliably take the bank statements. And a lot of clients have confessed to us that in previous years, they would just lock themselves in their office for at least a whole weekend with their bank statements and kind of just plow through all of it, like just get that into Excel and categorize all those transactions and just do it at the end of the year. So that is a possibility. Other times we'll see, you know, someone say, I got QuickBooks, I really, really tried, but I messed everything up, and like the positives are negative and all that happened.
Yes, yes.
If that's the case, that's okay. Like, my team and I, we actually really love those cases. We love it's a little bit like untangling a ball of yarn, figuring out what actually happened. Like, we see what's here, but what actually did happen? Yeah. So that can usually be a situation where you want to get some professional help, because it's going to take us a lot less time to fix something like that than someone who's inexperienced, right? We work with QuickBooks literally all day long. We know what to do. But then also you can right the ship and you might still be able to take over and do things correctly, but at least you can look back at what a professional did and say like, oh, that's what I was supposed to do. And then you at least know what it's supposed to look like. So I find that can be really, really helpful. But tackling it, just getting ahead of it and getting that information together, it really is useful at the end of the year to look at what happened and start planning ahead too for next year, right? If you have a sense of how much it costs you to operate your business, like you can prepare just a very basic budget for the following year. And that can be really, really helpful, especially if there's any plans of growth, to just try to track that and see, you know, what do I need to do to get to my financial goal?
Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate up front. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thrizer.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
As we are kind of looking at budgeting for the next year in 2021 and not knowing, depending on where you're at in the country, not knowing where COVID's going to be, is it appropriate to have part of that budget just be like, I don't know, WTF? Like, I mean, because part of things that like Katie and I do, you know, with our conference or when it comes to like travel stuff, that's just so hard to predict out there. For therapists who are looking to make some of those next steps, is it possible to have kind of an idea in an uncertain time like this?
Sure. Well, and I like to think of a budget and a forecast as a living, breathing thing. So just because you put it on paper right now doesn't mean it's not allowed to change. It can absolutely be updated, and there can be a WTF line item either in the income or the expenses. And so we often use that to some extent when we're looking at clients who say, you know, for example, I want to double my business next year, or I want to go to $100,000, $1 million, whatever that dollar amount may be. Like, we try to have a financial plan. Part of that is usually left up to luck, right? You might not get quite there, but like, something was probably we'll leave some of it up to chance. And so I mean that in the growth sense, but like, it's okay to have a line item saying, you know, COVID expenses and allocate something to that. Cause we don't really know. And that might end up being PPE. It could end up being legal expenses to get out of the lease. Like, it could be a lot of different things, but it doesn't have to be down to the penny. There's no judgment if you end up going a little over, a little under budget. It's really meant just as a guide to help you, and also sometimes give you permission to spend as a business owner, because that's okay too, right? There are expenses in a business, and that's normal.
And I do want to ask about, if you're talking about planning ahead here a little bit, and this being the very end of 2020 right now, is there things that people can do even just to plan ahead for the conversations that they're going to be having with their accountants about their 2020 taxes, that they can use these last couple of weeks right now to spend, or, you know, be like, here, I need to allocate this kind of money towards what my tax payments can end up being?
Yeah, well, so quarterly estimated tax payments are due January 15th. You know, it's a good time to plan ahead for that. At the year end, it's a good time to look at if there's any expenses that can be accelerated. And by that, I mean, if there's any expenses that were maybe slotted or planned for January and February, can you pay those in December if there's cash available in the business?
Like Therapy Reimagined conference tickets.
Like. Exactly. Exactly. Like, that's necessary and appropriate in 2020. Sure. Exactly. Woo-hoo. I never encourage people to buy things that they don't need, right? Because just to do some real simple math, if you're spending $100 on something that you don't need, and if you are in a 24% tax bracket, that means you're saving $24 in taxes. But if you don't need the thing, you're still out $100. So I really like to focus on this, because sometimes you'll hear stories of accountants go, you know, saying, oh, just buy a car. But like, if you don't need a car, that's not a good move. That's not a good move. So if there's things that you need, I'm thinking like software, prepay your virtual assistant, prepay your conference tickets, right? Like, sometimes you can pay a whole year of software ahead and get a discount. That's a win, right? So that's definitely something I would do if there's cash available. Those are the kinds of expenses that I would do. A lot of times, professional services, you can prepay. So you can prepay rent. You can pay two months of rent at once. You know, those are all little things that you can do. Retirement planning is also it's a great time of year to think about it. That can depend on what is available to you. If you already have a 401k in your business, which some business owners will, then max that out as much as you can, right? There might be one payroll left, so like, there's not a whole lot of time, but max that out. Even if you don't, as the business owner, have a 401k, maybe your spouse has one, they can max out their 401k. That's still, because all the income flows through to the household tax return in most cases, with the exception of a C corporation. The income flows through from the pass-through entities to the personal tax return. So just reducing the income of the household helps. But there's also IRAs that are available. So that's a personal retirement vehicle, but that still, again, reduces your household income as long as you're within the threshold. So you could contribute $6,000, your spouse could contribute $6,000, and that's a deduction as well. So like, all of those little things are doable. If you have an HSA, you can also max that out before the end of the year. Actually, after the end of the year, you can still do a retroactive contribution. So there's some things that you can do into 2021 as well. So IRAs are some, HSA as well. So those are all some of the tips that you can take advantage of.
Well, and to me, it seems like these would be things that would be important to talk about with an accountant or financial planner, where you can kind of make sure that you're investing appropriately, whether it's an IRA, SEP IRA, whatever it is, you know, making sure that you know what maxing it out is, because that depends on the income of the practice. And I think it's something where getting good advice right now, if you're listening to this in December, or you're listening to this into January, February, March, like, getting really good advice, and some of these things you can still do retroactively, it seems like it would make a lot of sense, especially if your practice has a higher tax burden because you made more money or you got, you know, some of these additional loans. It seems like there's more complexity for practice owners this year because of those loans. And I guess I feel like it just means that there needs to be more knowledge than clinicians typically have in order to make sure that you're not getting yourself running afoul of either taxes or these loans.
It is a little more complicated this year just because of all the different programs that there have been. Yeah, it just is. So an accountant will usually be able to give you some ideas as far as like what plans might work for you based on your situation, right? Because depending on if you have a 401k in the business, does a SEP make sense, right? Like does a simple make sense? Most accountants are not licensed for security, so won't be able to open those plans for you, but then we'll point you in the right direction and give you an idea of like what's tax advantageous for you. And then you can have a conversation also with your financial planner as well. And usually they can do that. Sometimes a lot of payroll companies also will offer retirement plans. So that's an option as well. There's a lot of options out there. I do recommend getting some help as far as like the calculations of everything. Yeah.
When it comes to some of those expenses and things that people can write off, or when they do have their accountants being like, you do need to spend some money here. We hear all sorts of really bad spending advice from other therapists who have not gone to tax accounting school and become accountants. And so we hear rumors from like, you know, there's legitimate business things like rent and you know, continuing education, licensing fees, this kind of stuff. Are there things that like paying for your own personal therapy that can be written off as a business expense? Or is this just bad advice being given and passed around as rumors in the therapist community?
Good question. So I would always caution people against taking tax advice from a Facebook group because you really usually don't know. I see that's shockingly often.
Yes.
But if you don't know where this person, like, what is their background? Where are they coming from? So I would just caution against that. There's a lot of gray zones and therapy is certainly one of them. I will call it a gray zone. So if it's truly like your personal therapy, personal expenses are not deductible by the business. But if it is, in a lot of cases, it is more of a consultation, right? Where you're a peer consult, that could be deductible. So it really depends on like your specific situation. That certainly would be something that you do have to issue a 1099 for, because that is a professional service. So you just want to probably be clear upfront on what exactly the expectation is there. But truly, personal expenses are not tax deductible.
Because I even heard people, and this is a total tangent, so this is just a comment unless you think it's worth continuing to talk about. But like, I had people talk about like, well, I got this outfit and this my hair done for a video, so I'm going to charge those to the business. And it feels like it can get, like, the gray zones can be extremely, you know, risky depending on how far you take them.
As I'm watching Julie listening to Katie's question, I'm seeing Julie's eye twitch in the same way that mine does when clients are like, so I did this totally off-label thing that makes no sense in what way whatsoever.
Yes, I get the twitch. There's a lot of questionable advice out there. So as far as you, and the IRS typically is very clear, in most cases is pretty clear. So uniforms are tax deductible. Buying a suit or an outfit just because you're going to be on camera, that is not tax deductible. So the IRS is clear here, where if you can wear an outfit for another purpose, it is not deductible. Not that you do, right? So some people will say, well, I bought a suit because I had to go to court, so that's deductible. But you could wear that to a wedding or a funeral or to a job interview. You could wear it somewhere else. If it's like a uniform, like scrubs, that would be deductible because you can't. It's not commonly accepted that you would wear that somewhere else. If you're having your hair done professionally, right, just as a one-off because you are recording a video that day, I think that probably would be considered deductible. Not getting your highlights done, just like a blowout, right? Something like that. I think in most cases that could muster, but not every week, right? So there's a lot of gray zones there. And like all of your makeup supply does not automatically become deductible because you recorded one YouTube video. So like that's where you want to have that conversation. And this time of year, we get a lot of questions about gifts because there are limitations. The gift limitation for the IRS is $25 per gift. And that's super low, right? You're really cheap boss if you only buy $25 gifts for your team. It's like, oh, how can I make it more deductible? And one client asks us, oh, my old accountant used to just say, buy the gifts and put them in uniforms. And that's totally illegal, right? So like, that's not allowed. We can't do that. And that doesn't mean you can't buy gifts for your team. You just, a portion of it is non-deductible. That's all there is to it. So buy the nice gift.
Well, I think the other thing too is I heard, you know, like giving gifts to, you know, potential referral sources and that kind of stuff. Like there's probably ethical stuff around that. So Kurt and I can talk about that in another episode, but like this was in a just kind of general business thing. And it was like, well, if it's a gift, it can only be $25, but if it's swag, then it's a marketing expense. And so if it's like you give a bottle of wine, but it's a completely branded bottle of wine, then all of a sudden it's swag and you can give it away at whatever cost it is. Like it seems like everybody's trying to find these loopholes.
Yeah. And there are certainly gray zones there, right? Because as far as advertising rules, if you're advertising, like supporting a local T-ball league or soccer league, right? For example, if you can reasonably expect to get business from having your business name and logo in the program, you know, technically that is advertising, right? Not that you're necessarily, that you can prove that you got business from it, but that you can reasonably expect that doing this is creating goodwill. So like there are certainly some, a lot of little gray zones there.
So that's another potential opportunity for people if they need to spend some money for next year. Early is we've got podcasts and conference sponsorships, right?
Yes. Exactly. One of the questions we get a lot is, you know, how can I deduct things? And the IRS's definition is an expense has to be ordinary and necessary to be deductible. And so that doesn't mean that it's indispensable. It just means that it's commonly accepted in the industry. So you could run a practice without ever running a Google ad campaign. That's certainly possible, but it's also very acceptable that you would run a Google ad campaign because that's going to create more income and more tax for the IRS, right? So it just has to be reasonable and normal.
Simplified SEO Consulting's team of mental health professionals genuinely want to help you attract more of your ideal clients with a proven on-page SEO process using the strategies that are most effective for therapist websites. They know SEO is an investment, which is why it is so important to find someone who aligns with your values and understands the importance of building your private practice in a meaningful way. Simplified SEO Consulting hopes to be that team for you and your practice.
The expert team would love to talk with you during a free consultation to figure out the best fit for your SEO journey. Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY, done with you training, and done for you SEO options. So there's truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Be sure to ask if their innovative content network is a good fit for your website. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off a DIY SEO course with code MODERNTHERAPIST or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off your done-for-you SEO program onboarding this spring.
Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern-therapist.
So if we make things standard practice, like paying for our own therapy, then we could convince the IRS collectively that what we're doing is Julie's
possibly.
Eye is twitching
take
again.
It on.
Possibly.
Julie's exactly. Eye is twitching again. I want to shift gears here a little bit. There's a number of different ways that therapists can set up their practice as a business. We hear about sole props. We hear about S-corps. In some states, people can have LLCs. In some states, they can't. What makes the most sense for most people in private practice?
The two of you are in California, and in California, a licensed professional cannot be an LLC, right? And right. So in the case of California, basically your options are you can be a sole proprietor, so doing business as yourself with your own name, or a PC, which is a professional corporation. In that case, for liability purposes and not tax purposes, it usually makes sense to be a professional corporation, because for tax purposes, it usually would make sense to be sole proprietor. So there's differences there where, you know, the tax benefit might not necessarily correlate to the legal benefit. But then, as you mentioned, Kurt, in most states, an LLC is allowed. And so for someone just starting out, I always like the protection of an LLC, and I'm not an attorney, so this is just my opinion. I like the legal protection of an LLC at the very least, because it doesn't always make sense to have an S-corp right away. And that is probably the advice I see the most often given in a Facebook group is, oh, you should be an escort. My accountant said it was a great idea. And that truly depends on so many different factors. It depends on all the income coming into the household. It depends on how much income is coming in through the business. But then in 2017, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act added another layer of complication to that with QBI, which is a qualified business income. And that's a 20% deduction that doesn't behave the same way for a sole proper and LLC and an S corporation. So I know it can be really tempting to save some money and do it on your own, but it's not always tax advantageous. We've seen plenty of people do their own S corp election. And then we realize once they start working with us, like that tax-wise, they're actually paying a lot more in taxes because they're not able to take advantage of some deductions. But then also there's a lot more compliance costs. And so doing an election on your own and not knowing what the compliance requirements are, that can get you in hot water as well, where like you've missed some things and the deadlines are different and you haven't run payroll, and that can get you into some trouble as well.
Well, I think it can be, like you said, it can be so different based on different, you know, like what money is coming into your household. So it's not like, oh, and a lot of people say like, oh, well, if I'm making over $100,000 or the revenue in my practice is over $100,000, I should be an S corp. Or if I'm at $30,000, I should be an S corp. Or I should be a sole proprietor. Like it's such a complex decision that it really is something where you want to talk both to probably a business attorney as well as your accountant to identify exactly how to balance both the liability and the tax burdens. Because I think for, you know, when the more recent, as far as I understand it, the more recent tax laws actually provided some relief for corporations that may have shifted the math and that may shift again come any kind of tax changes and tax laws that come up in 2021. So it feels like to me oftentimes four-dimensional chess, and it really is important to speak to those professionals who can help look at your individual situation.
It really is quite complex. And years ago, it used to be a slam dunk, right? If you were at 100,000, it could make sense. It would usually make sense to go the S corp route. But one thing to keep in mind is there are some states that do not recognize S corp status. And so that means that in those states, the business is actually taxed as a C corp. And so if you're looking at just the IRS side, sure, there might be a tax savings there, but that can be offset completely and then some by the additional tax that's now going to be paid at the state level. But so what we look, just to give you an example, what we look for, if you have a single member LLC, if you're in a state that allows that, and you have $50,000 in income, there's additional compliance costs, right? There's an additional tax return. You have to run payroll and you have to pay yourself a reasonable salary. So there's a lot of different little pieces that are going to add up to usually like $2,000 to $3,000 per year in additional costs. So you want to make sure that your tax savings is at least that if you're going to make the change. But then if you're in a situation where there's a high income spouse that's bringing in $400,000 a year, that changes the numbers, right? Automatically that changes the numbers because there are some deductions that you have phased out of. And so like those are all the pieces of the puzzle that we take into consideration when we're looking at that.
And the tax laws are changing all the time. And so even if you fully learn it and understand it in this moment, it could be changing in 6 months.
Yes. Well, and chances are the new administration won't change things retroactively, but the game could change completely in 2021. Yeah. We don't really know what that's going to look like yet. So it's not, the S corp is not always a slam dunk. Sometimes it makes sense to start small and just grow and just reevaluate every year. I think it's a good idea to have that conversation and to reevaluate, but not just to assume that because someone else said it was a good idea that it automatically is.
Are there changes for 2021 that small business owners and therapists should be aware of when it comes to planning the way that they'll be preparing for their 2021 tax returns at this time next year?
It is pretty early for that. There certainly are rumors that there could be higher tax brackets specifically for high income earners could be coming down the line. probably wouldn't, it might change mid-year if there was new tax legislation. That might change how we calculate quarterly estimated tax payments. Because generally those are, when you get vouchers with your tax return, if you get vouchers, those are usually calculated based on the last year's tax. So they're depending on how much you earn, you either have to pay 100% or 110% in estimated tax based on what you owed the previous year. So we look at that, and that's a known thing. We don't know exactly what you're going to make this year. So we can look at the known and calculate estimates. So if I had to guess, we're going to have to probably rework those numbers mid-year if there is new tax legislation. I would plan on possibly earning or owing a little bit more, but not if you're, my best guess is not if you're under the 300,000 range. That would be my guess.
So for folks who are looking to, whether it's clean up their books or actually be more proactive in planning, to me, it seems like having a trusted advisor, someone that can help you both now for any kind of last minute 2020 stuff, but also in the planning for 2021, because there is more complexity and there may be some big changes. And so to me, what I'm just hearing is that, and I think I've been saying a lot of it too, but just like make sure that you recognize that you don't know this stuff. And not knowing this stuff could be very harmful for the profitability of your business, but also the compliance of your business with what you need to be doing. And some of the stuff you can just pay a fine, or you can just kind of get back on track or pay an overdue fee, so to speak. But some of it actually could really hinder your ability to be a private practice owner long term.
It could. And as a clinician, it's not your job to keep up with all of that, right? So if you have a trusted advisor, whether that's an accountant, just a tax preparer, a bookkeeper, that someone who's staying on top of these things and all the changes, right? We just had changes to the PPP deductibility a couple of weeks ago. It's staying on top of that and sharing that information with you, that's worth something as well, right? So that you can have peace of mind, like when I need to know something, when there's something that's big, they're going to be able to share with me and explain it in terms that make sense to me, not in, you know, IRS speak. and that's valuable as well, right? That's a valuable piece of the relationship as well.
Thank you so much for spending time with us today. Yes. Where can people find you and about all of the services that you offer at Green Oak Accounting?
So listeners can head over to greenoakaccounting.com/tax. Where you can grab our free tax planning checklist. And you can also schedule a free consultation with my team if you'd like to find out more about our services. You can also check out therapyforyourmoney.com, where we talk about all financial topics for therapists in private practice.
And we'll include links to all of that in our show notes. You can find those at mtsgpodcast.com. And we've had Green Oak Accounting as a sponsor before on the show, and we've had a couple of our modern therapists reach out to us and let us know how happy they are with the services over there. So some of our community has really enjoyed working with Julie and her team. And once again, thank you for your time today.
Yes, thank you.
And thanks for having me.
And until next time, I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy and Julie Harris.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.
Remember to check out Thrizer. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thrizer.com/modern therapist and use the promo code Modern Therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
Don't forget, we have some special offers from our partner, Simplified SEO Consulting. Get 20% off a DIY SEO course with the code Modern Therapist, or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off of your onboarding to the Done For You SEO program. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist.